Well, it went over. Now I'm going back down that sunny road. Making nothing in Chicago, darling, but my room and board. When I was making good, darling, you treat me like I was a king. When I was making good, baby, you treat me like I was a king. Now you got no walkman job. Now my love don't mean anything.
Some good old-fashioned serious, serious blues by Pine Top Perkins, the legendary piano-playing blues man from Mississippi and one of the last, and some say also one of the greatest, of the Delta blues tradition with Sunny Road Blues, backed up by, of course, some fierce mouth harp, as he calls it. Lay people called it the harmonica. He calls it the mouth harp by James Cotton, and some fancy guitar work from Jimmy Rogers and Hubert Sumlin. Pine Top Perkins, by the way, was 97 and died in 2011, and 1 month after receiving a Grammy Award for Best Traditional Blues Album. That album was titled Joined at the Hip. Well, this is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, October the 18th. And I'm okay. I know I got so many emails from people saying, are you okay? You sure? Check yourself. You might have blown a gasket someplace. Yeah, I get it. And to be very honest about it, you know, when you're around long enough and you see how things work out politically, I mean, you see the plans literally unfolding almost in slow motion, and you can see the wall going up brick by brick, careful construction, you know, to just wall off the very people who are an integral and critical part of a huge plan to achieve a goal that is never shared, it's never made known. But it is so dangerous, and you feel like you're screaming in the wilderness. Don't you see what is happening? Can't you get it? Don't you understand? And sometimes you do feel that way. And I guess I felt that way yesterday because, you know, in the aftermath of this debacle in Washington, which continues, and we'll get to that today, you see that there's a particular viciousness. I don't know why I feel that more so than in other years gone by. There's a particular viciousness to it, you know, a real heartlessness about the administration and the governmental apparatus in general, an insensitivity, to be kind, I could call it insensitivity, but is just cutthroat politics, nasty, you know, gutter snipe type politics. And there used to be, I mean, I hate to use the word conscience and politics in the same sentence, but they, you know, you got a sense from years gone by that there was a kind of a clock that, you know, would ring when it hit that particular hour to signify that things are really at a danger point, and just back off, back away. Don't bring this thing down to this level. And people are hurting very, very badly. And I take this stuff personally because I see that it is not for lack of people's involvement. People are doing exactly what is asked of them. You know, the president says, support me. And the Democratic Party says, support me. The Republican Party, for that matter, says, support us. But when the people do, and you see how completely walled off they are, Democrats and Republicans alike, once it reaches that stage of critical mass, they just take it upon themselves to do whatever it is they want to do. And the end result was we had an agreement that was loaded with sneaky legislation. You know, there's an agreement and it was broadcast and they said, oh, well, this is the agreement. Is this the agreement? Yes, it is the agreement. And all media are reporting, this is the agreement that they've reached. And they put a big board up and these are the components of this agreement. And this is what we're calling for. And they have all the charts and whatnot on the tripods and pointing to it and so forth. But all the while that they're saying this, there's a whole other program going on. And someone had made the comment the other day that, you know, we go through ups and downs in politics like this, and cycles. And now this cycle would be the Barack Obama first African-American president cycle, and then may come a woman's turn, and then after that maybe a Latino and so forth. But we got some indication from Nancy Pelosi, who is the House Minority Leader, the women are just as bad as the men. You know, they're really incredible. Nancy Pelosi is really a very fascinating woman as House Minority Leader. She's asked at this news conference by reporters who got wind of a bunch of things that turned up as surprises in the finally executed agreement. That was news to even legislators themselves who thought they had voted on an agreement to deal with the debt ceiling, to cover that and to extend the debt ceiling and to set a date for budget talks. And universally known items that they thought they had voted on. But then came wind that all these little things were snuck in there at the last minute, and this bill was rushed through with a whole bunch of things, projects, that never came up in the discussion. But the people voting on this in the House and in the Senate had no idea they were there. So I thought I would share with you what the House Minority Leader sounded like in trying to explain this to reporters who were pressing her for an answer. How is it that legislators thought they were voting for one thing, and then all these other little projects are showing up? How did that happen? Here's Nancy Pelosi's response.
People started to read the bill and looked through it. There's been some criticism about things that were included that had not been talked about, different appropriations from small things.
What whip are we talking about now, the Affordable Care
Act? Yes, last night's bill.
Oh, last night's bill. Okay, I didn't know which bill we were
talking about. Sorry, turning back to the... And so there's been criticism about things that were added in, appropriations, everything from the death benefit to the Lautenberg family to the Kentucky lock. Was this crisis really the right time to add things that didn't have anything to do with reopening the government?
Well, my members asked some of the same questions, not certainly in terms of the death penalty to the Lautenberg family. But this, when you have a CR, it is an appropriation. And this, yes, would be the normal place for them to do something like that. Now, we in the House are always suspicious of the Senate when they want to go first and what are they doing over there. But I think the questions I ask, because my members were asking those questions, as an appropriator, I understand, go first and what are they doing over there. When you have a continuing resolution, it is all of the appropriations for the preceding year, and this was consistent with what would be in a continuing resolution.
For people who look at it, though, and say, is this the right thing to do, to add things when we thought it was...
I don't know that they were added. I think it was just a continuation of what went before. But it wasn't, whatever it was, it was not enough to say, we're not going to open up government because there's something that, what did they say, Senator McConnell put in about a road or something? I don't know what that was.
The dam.
Apparently, that is something that has been an ongoing project for many years, and this was a continuation of that. But I'm not here to defend what that is. I'm here to say that I didn't even like the number. So, I mean, forget about when it's a dental appropriate. I don't even like the 986. I don't like the timetable until February. So I had bigger problems than what that might have been, that one appropriation may have been in the bill. But nonetheless, none of it was a reason not to open government and remove all doubt that we were going to honor the full faith and credit of the United States.
Madam, to that end, though, you cite your history on the Appropriations Committee. An anomaly, by definition, is not an appropriation. This is an authorization. I mean, and to have that put into a bill that is an appropriation. Isn't there a...
You know what? What difference does it make? Why are we talking about it? We're talking about a bill that is, as I said last night, I'm not asking anybody to vote for this bill on the merits. Let's focus on the fact that 986 is not a figure that enables government to work for the American people. Let us focus on the fact that February is not an appropriate extension of the full faith and credit of the United States. It should be at least 1 year. So if you want to have an objection to the bill, there are bigger things to object to. But the fact is that we had to open government. The ways of the Senate on these issues is something that I have my own, shall we say, ongoing concerns about. So when we were going to have the bill first, I thought, good, it'll be just the bill. When the Senate takes it up, the Senate is the Senate. You have to talk to them about what's in the bill and what its purpose was. But what I said on the floor, I'm not pinning a rose on this bill, but I am giving it a vote because we have to open government. And we didn't have to close government because we made this offer of a bill, a number that we knew was inadequate, but at least takes us to the table.
I think context for my question, just to button this up, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
There is a certain public frustration and cynicism about how Congress has been operating. And so when they see things that are added in, it can add to that. Would you have a message to people?
Well, the fact is that I think you have to take that up with the Senate. That's not how the House works. That's how the Senate works. You have to take it up with them. But the cynicism is not about that. The cynicism is about the fact that the government was closed for 16 days, that the full faith and credit of the United States of America was in doubt. And why? Because the anti-government ideologues in the Republican caucus were the tail wagging the dog. And everybody described it, oh, it was just a few, it's 30-some. It was 100, it was 62% of their caucus voted to keep government shut down. 62% of their caucus voted to default on the full faith and credit of the United States of America. That is what I think many more people are aware of that than they're aware of of the particular of that. I don't think any of that should be in the bills. I don't know how it got in there. In fact, I displayed my own dismay at it. Only learned of it because I was saying, what's holding up the bill? Why aren't we not voting on this bill? And they said, well, they were dealing with some of these things. I said, well, what are some of these things? So that's how I found out about it myself. But that's you need 60 votes in the Senate. The Senate is another place. I think your questions should be directed to them because this was nothing that we were consulted about or anything. It just became part of the bill. Yes, ma'am.
Moving forward, how does Congress prevent another one of these sort of crisis situations? How much confidence do you have in the Budget Conference Committee to be able to produce an actual workable solution?
I think the more, if it is a transparent negotiation, I have more hope than if they say that.
Well, she is talking, visit talking, about this little issue. It's a very issue. There are bigger issues to talk about. I'll tell you what the little issue is in a minute, but I just thought I would present first the attitude. Number one, this is the leader, the minority leader in the House. And the House passed this bill by a vote of 285 to 144. Okay? So if you're the minority leader in the House, you're supposed to know certain things. And if you don't know certain things about how money is allocated, and this is not a regular budget process, this is the nation on the brink, on the very brink of defaulting and shutting down and catastrophe. And we have open admission by Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, the Democrat for the Democratic Party, who is saying to reporters asking her, well, wait a minute, we're reading about projects that weren't part of the discussion. How did these things come in there? And she says she doesn't know. She has no idea. But in any event, she said something that triggered a memory for me, and she says, what difference does it make, she says. Do you remember that very phrase? What difference does it make? That's what Hillary Clinton had said when she was being questioned about Benghazi and the deaths of the United States ambassador and three others in the attack on the U.S. compound in Benghazi. They're dead already. What difference does it make, she said. And here's Nancy Pelosi repeating the same thing. It's a done deal. What difference does it make? Well, let's discuss what difference it makes. It's a 35-page bill. Once the wrangling was going back to and fro and all of the drama and all of the tension and whatnot, finally, with the collapse in the House, the Republicans were not able to put together a bill because there was a lot of infighting. So they looked to the Senate to articulate the bill, and they did so. We had the Senate Majority Leader and the Senate Minority Leader. So we had Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell essentially carrying this thing through. And it came up for a vote, and everybody was pleased. It passed. So crisis averted. But as they looked in, as they looked into the fine print of this 35-page bill, they found that Mr. McConnell himself was given essentially close to $3 billion for a project to complete work on a dam that had been way over budget, way over time, and it was not part of the discussion. And when you can just, you know, with a stroke of a pen, somebody decides, hey, look, let's give the guy $3 billion, okay? You got it. It's a done deal. No problem. So that this enables Mitch McConnell, the Republican, to go back to his district and say, hey, I have been bringing home the bacon, because in a sense, that amount of money is a jobs bill. That is a jobs bill, and the president has not yet been able to launch a jobs program. Mitch McConnell got a jobs program like that. And then we had another $450 million allotted for flooded projects out in Colorado that will make the Coloradans very happy. And then we had $174,000 as a death benefit being paid to the widow of Senator Lautenberg, who is independent, he died, of course, but the family is independently very wealthy. He was one of the multimillionaires in Congress. Let's just give her $174,000, the equivalent of a year's salary. It's pocket change, but let's just do it. It's a nice gesture. It wasn't part of the discussion. And then you had $636 million allocated to fight wildfires. And you had, other projects that decidedly benefited from this wrangling in Congress. A lot of money going into projects that the people voting on them had no idea. And you know what? It was exactly that way that Obamacare passed. They voted on a project, Obamacare, and nobody knew what was in it. But here is how John McCain responded upon learning. He learned later on after the vote. He learned what had happened and all this money being bandied around that had been allocated without any formal approval of these extra projects. People were voting, they thought, on the agreement to, as they say, reopen the government, to agree on a date for budget talks in mid-December, and to basically pay the government's bills until January. Here's McCain talking to Fox News and Neil Cavuto. Here's how he reacted to this report about these pork barrel projects.
McCain certainly hopes so. The senator, former presidential candidate, says we don't need it. And by the way, we don't even have the cash for it.
No matter how the economy is looking, we're just committing more and more generational theft on mortgaging our kids' futures. We are just passed a bill with over $4 billion worth of earmarked projects. Outrageous, pork barrel, corrupting spending. Let me just give you an example. $2.9 million to study surgery in outer space. Surgery in outer space to the University of Nebraska, an earmarked pork barrel project. I'm sure the Trekkies all over America are happy. But you count them all up, and it's $4.3 billion in earmarked projects, which are unneeded, unwanted, unnecessary, and contribute to this $1.5 trillion debt we've run up just for this year.
Well, you better hope there aren't a lot of Trekkies in Arizona, Senator, because you just lost them. But in all seriousness, what do you make of the fact that a lot of this is Republican earmark? A lot of this is Republican.
Well, that's the thing that's most disturbing about it, Neil. I think that one of the major reasons why we lost the 2006-2008 elections is that we Republicans let spending get out of control, unfunded mandates such as the Medicare prescription drug bill, and we lost our base. We lost our conservative credentials. So now we still have Republicans, and only a few of them, only three yesterday voted against me on, voted for this bill.
Right.
But we still have Republicans who will continue to want to do this corrupting appropriations earmark pork barrel stuff that is just outrageous. We're going to take up a defense bill, which, by the way, has the national debt limit increase on it, and it'll be loaded down with pork also.
So what do you do in a position like that? I know you're for the troops and helping them out, but then they're very financial support hangs on this type of omnibus legislation. What do you do?
If we had any guts, we would vote it down, send it back to the president, tell him to strip all the pork out of it, as he promised that he would. He said that we wouldn't continue, there would be change in Washington, and we wouldn't do this anymore. Have him send it back. We could have it passed again in 24 hours. Just take out all the pork and unnecessary spending, the billions.
But, you know, Senator, billions. When I talk to some of your Republican colleagues, and I've had many of them on the last few days, and cite their apparent hypocrisy on railing against pork, but including it in their own voting in this latest omnibus piece of work. To a man and one woman, they kind of say, well, you know, this isn't pork, this is a little different. But they each argue that. And I wonder, like, where do you draw the line between someone's vital program and someone's pork? What's the definition?
It's easy. All you have to do is, whether it's authorized or not, if you authorize it, even if I happen to not agree with it, at least it's gone through the process. For the benefit of our viewers, you authorize projects and then you appropriate the money for it. What they do now is they go around that. In the middle of the night, they put in a pork barrel project that has no scrutiny or competition with anybody else's. It's all directly related to the influence of the member of Congress. That's wrong, and it's corruption. We have former members of Congress residing in federal prison, and Americans are mad as hell about it, and that's what's part of the Tea Party situation. Part of this, I think there's a silent revolution going, not so silent revolution, but it's a peaceful one going on out there, and the repercussions, I think, are going to be felt less than a year from now.
Senator, your former running mate Sarah Palin has made much ado about this Tea Party movement and the fact that this is representative of a movement that kind of has had it with both parties. Do you agree with her in that respect?
Yes. Well, I agree to a large extent because, again, we've got to convince these people are largely independent voters. We have to convince them that we're not going to do what we did for 8 years, that we're going to be serious about their taxpayers' dollars, that we're not going to waste it and spend it on studies. We've forgotten which one. My favorite of all time, I think it was a million to study the effect on the ozone layer of flatulence in cows. There's one on this one that is for irritable bowel research. If this healthcare thing continues for too long, I may support the first earmark in my life.
Careful. This is the early bird special time for a lot of folks, Senator. So let me get your take. I mean, if others are saying, all right, this is a sign that Republicans don't mean what they say, Democrats don't mean what they say, and others have urged the likes of Sarah Palin, why don't you run as an independent? What would John McCain recommend?
I would say, first of all, the majority of Democrats, overwhelming, only three Democrats yesterday voted against it. Only three Republicans voted for it. So there is a huge difference. But the point is that we have to regain these people's allegiance. That's what we have to do. And we are a party of principles and philosophy and views that I think can attract independent voters. I think we continue to articulate and act in a way in accordance with our principles of Ronald Reagan, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. We're going to do just fine, but we got to prove it to them. They're very cynical out there, and I understand that cynicism.
Federal Express, busiest shipping day ever. Mm-hmm. Post Office, mm-hmm. Similar numbers. Mm-hmm. Is this economy coming back?
Oh, I hope so. I hope it's coming back. But let's not have a false choice between debt and economic recovery. I mean, we don't have to spend more money on these programs that haven't worked and have run up these huge, massive debts. We can act fiscally responsibly, in my view, and we can at the same time not contribute more to the debt. Let's have a payroll tax holiday. Let's cut the corporate tax. Let's take a number of other measures, including doing away with the tens of billions of dollars of pork barrel spending. But now what they want is a commission. A commission, as you know, when they continue to vote for wasteful spending. That's not the answer.
All right. I read this profile on you in a very prominent newspaper today. It says that you're a little angry, a little snarly, and all. I don't see any evidence of that right now. But it seemed to surmise that your presidential ambitions are over and all, but I still see a very vibrant senior senator here. Have you really given up your presidential aspirations, period?
how many times do you want me to lose, Neil?
I'm just asking. That's all.
But look, right. I'm happy. I cannot tell you. I hope that I can play a large part in the loyal opposition. I've enjoyed this. It's vigorous. It's important. It's vital to the people of my state. And I can tell you that, look, I am so lucky to be able to represent the people of Arizona and to come where I've come. I hate to keep mentioning this, but I'm the guy that stood fifth from the bottom of his class at the Naval Academy. My old Marine company officer could see me now. He'd be astonished. I'm very grateful.
Well, what we had is a snapshot of what is wrong with politics and the fact that there is no way that anybody from the Democratic Party could point fingers at the Republicans, nor any Republican could point fingers at the Democrats. They're up to this, he called it, and I wrote it down, generational theft. This is how they do it. This is how they do it. And here's a Republican saying, condemning his members of his own party. This is what they do. There's no difference. There's not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans. This is how Obamacare got passed. In the middle of the night, right under the radar, not coming out of any committee, and next thing you know, boom, it's the law. You see? So that's the state of affairs in Washington. Washingtonians, the people in the Senate, the people in Congress, the people in the White House, they all are feasting on the same diet. It's called pork. We'll take a break and come back to your questions and comments right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Beatrice Lead, and we're just confirming what we already know. We know that in politics, politics has reached a really new low in terms of standards. And we see these are rogue operators. I mean, even when the bright lights are shining down on you in the Congress and intense scrutiny, they still are so brazen. They're so larcenous. They are finding a way, even though it is illegal. So we have to have a system, I think. When this happens, these people ought to be called out and ought to be summarily removed. These are ethical violations. They should not be part of a governing body of any sort. But this is par for the course. A bill is put on the floor, some piece of legislation is being considered. Great, let's have a vote. Somebody is ordered, some legislative aide, some legal, somebody who is just out of law school, that's their job. Come in and insert legislation that has not been discussed, but that is now part of the funding package. And it is, as you can hear from both John McCain, the Republican, and Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat, they are resigned that it cannot be undone. It's a done deal. As Nancy Pelosi says, what difference does it make? What difference? It's a done deal. Get over it. What difference does it make? And by the way, the country is in near meltdown, financial and fiscal meltdown. They don't have money. This is the whole point of talking about the debt ceiling. But $4 billion plus in just a some scattered projects that are inserted in a 35-page measure to be voted on. That's the level of larceny that is in the hearts of these folks down there in D.C. And this is why, for the public, You know, they're fed up with this nonsense because everybody's doing it. The president is doing it. The senators are doing it. The representatives in the House are doing it. There are no rules that anybody feels compelled to observe. And this is why, by the way, one of the things that they actually had to agree on was a budget by mid-December. Finally, it looks like there might be a budget for the first time in Barack Obama's tenure so far. 5 years. The country is not being run according to a budget. And it suits them well. Because when you have a budget, it's right there in black and white. Everybody knows what the line items are, and everybody can now tell where the money is going and also where the money is coming from. The Republicans and the Democrats, although they talk this nonsense, especially the Republicans with this notion of fiscal responsibility and all of that, they're stealing the country blind. It's, you know, the coffers of the nation are their own personal ATMs. They're doing whatever they want. There's no budget. There's nothing to hold anybody accountable. So everybody is doing fantastically well in serving the people who have financed their campaigns or who will finance their campaigns. And they're seeing to those folks, taking care of them. They'll get around to a budget, but let's see. That's going to be a huge fight come mid-December. It's going to be huge. But I thought I would share that with you because from the outside, we don't get a sense that these folks, that there are many folks, especially those in leadership positions, who are fully aware of what's going on, fully aware of this, of what McCain just referred to as generational theft. This is how they steal money. But they will make poor people, working poor people, just people just trying to get by, they will make them eat the results of shortage of cash. The people are the ones bearing the brunt of the burden for all of these things. All they have to do is sit down in some place in the dead of night and stick in a sheet or two saying, yeah, this is approved. And that is supposed to be a democratic process. See what I'm saying? That will never be tolerated in the regular world. You can't do that. But in Congress, you could do that and still have a job and still get paid and still have benefits and still have status and all the other things. But if you listened closely to McCain, you're hearing the voice of an old hand Republican who is disgusted by his own party. And there are people in the Democratic Party like that too, probably about three or four. But this larcenous, outrageous conduct of doing whatever they want to do, fully aware that they will suffer no sanction, no penalties, there will be nothing done to them because they can always say, you know, they did it. They're legislators, after all. There's no price to pay for going rogue in the House or in the Senate or even in the White House. So there. That's a lesson in civics. You're on the air, Jay.
Hey, how you doing, Utrice? And I hope you have a beautiful weekend. And this is real
quick.
Thank
you. You too.
Do you think at any point in time you could have some of the Democratic operatives that go on MSNBC and CNN come on to your show and have some kind of debate? Because it seems like they're really making a lot of assertions about this Obamacare that are just blatantly not so true. Because I've been spending a little bit of time looking at it, and I really think that the cost of the Obamacare, if it's not any adjustments made to it, is going to be the downfall of this country economically. Because, you know, average Joe Blow, it's going to really, really hurt them when it's all said and done because of the extended obligations that they're going to have if they get real sick or something like that. So I'm just hoping at some point in time you can bring some of these people that, you know, up support this and praise it and all of that and really try and give them the information that you've been giving to us for the last couple of months because for some reason they don't want to hear what you're saying and what the people that you're bringing on to your program are saying. I think they're really frightened by it because I think deep down inside they know that this is going to be a semi-disaster. I'm not going to say total disaster, but a semi-disaster.
Well, I appreciate your thought there, but I have a different view. I think these folks have had ample time to show their allegiances, and every time, at every turn, practically, they have sided with the party against their people. And, you know, why waste time with people like that? If, for example, they're terrified of the party, and this is what is happening also on the Republican side. They're terrified of the party structure. Well, the Republicans have a kind of internal challenge, although, albeit, you know, they call it the Tea Party element or the real, real right wing. However, it is in a way, in a very perverse way, it's keeping them reasonably accountable and semi-quasi-honest because the whole thing is no waste of public dollars and, you know, you must conserve the money that you have and spend it well and all this other kind of stuff. So they have that going on in the Democrat, in the Republican Party, which is why they were not able to produce a piece of legislation to vote on, even in the House where they are the majority. So the Republican Party is going through its own thing, being forced by the presence of this ultra-conservative element. And, you know, there's reason to be very concerned about that element. The Democratic Party has an entirely different thing going on. They have the ability, especially in what they call minority districts, they have the ability to just absolutely vanquish anybody that they want. They could back a straw candidate. And next thing you know, an incumbent has a fight on his hands. And that alone is enough to scare elected officials in these congressional districts where, you know, they can't raise funds that much. And this is why they look to the party to infuse some kind of cash into their coffers to help them retain the congressional districts. And they're more dedicated to their so-called political careers. It's not about, you know, very few of African American and Latino legislators could be as independent as, say, an Adam Clayton Powell was, because Powell had his own power base. He didn't have to account to anybody. He didn't have to be in fear of anybody. He cultivated his own power base in his own community. That is not the case with most members of the African American and Latino members of Congress. So they are terrified of the Democratic Party structure, which is why they go before the structure. It is the structure that produces the candidates, that is to say, selects the candidates, who are then presented for election. There's no sustained history of independent African-American and Latino candidates running. They look to the party to subsidize their political careers. So that's how the party keeps check of them and keeps them in line. So The stimulus to such representatives, it seems to me, is moving away from the party especially in these districts, getting new leadership, forming new parties, and really getting very excited about the possibility of something new. Thanks, Jay, for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. It is interesting. I thought these two clips illustrated the fact that they know full well what is going on. They know exactly what is going on, and they know that they're doing the wrong things. They're dedicated to it, though. You heard that silly explanation from Nancy Pelosi. You know full well she's up to it, up to her eyeballs in that kind of that largesse, that kind of political swill that many of the elected officials live in, and they're so comfortable living there all day, every day. Don't be fooled by those pearls. You know, that's an old political hack. In the oldest political hack sense of the word. Michael from New Jersey, hello.
Hi, Eutrice. Thanks hello. For taking my call.
I like
your word larceny, and I just punched it up on my computer, and it says the unauthorized taking and removal of the personal property of another by an individual who intends to permanently deprive the owner of it.
Lucky me, I landed on a good word.
That's appropriate for what we're talking about. But, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, and I, as I said, I think yesterday, if we could remove all influence, money, and power from governmental process, from the state apparatus, what would it mean? What would be the role of politics, and what would be politics without money, power, and influence? Would there be politics, really? This is what we know politics to be. So when you inquire about democracy, really what you want to do is remove the division between the government and the people, so that if we say we the people, it's really the people. But even if you say it's a republic, you know, I looked that up too, mm-hmm. and even though it is a presidential system, you have a central government, et cetera, the power, it's expressly says that the power resides with the people. So it's not being carried out the way it's supposed to. The system we have, never mind another system. So why isn't it being carried out the way? Because the Supreme Court, in two huge, you know, interpretations of our Constitution, said, number one, that corporations are people, and number two, that money is speech. And especially that last one, when they determined in Citizens United that money is speech, then we're out of the game. Because the most everybody, the kind of speech that's more attractive is money than people mm-hmm. talking. So we're out of the game with those two decisions. And this is why I think that there is on the internet, there's a thing that says move to amend. And so there is a movement out there to amend the Constitution to get, you know, money out of politics. Now there's, you know, there's corruption. Even if we change the law, there would be still, you know, because human beings can go around the law, there would be corruption. But those people should go to jail.
Yes, they should. But who's going to do that? Who's going to put them there when the people putting them there are themselves guilty? Who's going to do it? You know, there's no way. This is a quagmire. And all of this thing that is going on, it's the people who are losing. They are going on with their game. They're doing their thing. They're completely protected because, you know, they're just in cahoots with each other. The system works the same way on both sides of the aisle.
Well, nutrients. They legalize what they're doing, though.
Sure, of course.
I mean, we agree that it's immoral and it should be illegal. In the past, you know, in Tammany Hall and all these things, people went to jail for influence peddling. But they have legalized it through Supreme Court decisions.
Yeah, like Obamacare.
Exactly.
Remember, we had this Professor Blackmon here talking about the precedents. There are so many precedents, T.S., in this particular bill. And the Supreme Court is just rubber stamping and just saying, yep, you're right. Again, corporations are people. Corporations, therefore, are entitled to free speech. And so it can dole out millions and millions to sway an election or the outcome of an election to their fancy, to their advantage, which is what they're doing. So this is what I mean. The crisis that we're in is also a wonderful opportunity to see how well alternatives can work and to give courage to start the process, if it isn't already started, but to start the process of creating alternative leadership and to have that leadership organically grown. These are people who should be really directly accountable to constituencies. And this is what I think is the opportunity that is presented here, not just to throw up our hands and say, oh, my gosh, we'll never win, but we would, the fact that we should come to the realization that we will almost always lose in this scenario. We will almost never win.
But I was never so aware that the Supreme Court is so undermining the people. There are very key decisions that have come down in the Supreme Court that's really chopping people off at the knees. They are just, they are just directing a small group of people to control the levers of power, especially when they say money is speech, because that's endgame for democracy.
It certainly is. Thank you, Michael, for your call.
You're welcome.
We've reached the end of our program today. I hope it was useful to hear from the admissions on the inside, the acts of omission and commission routinely engaged in by leaders in the House and in the Senate and even in the White House and the U.S. Supreme Court, which leaves only one alternative, and that is that we would be crazy to continue to lend support to that. A system that will vanquish us, a system designed, in fact, to vanquish us. The only reason that people are needed is simply to give the illusion of some kind of a democratic process that we have elected these bozos and they have their own program going to benefit their own tight circles. Really offensive, really, really offensive. And that is where the anger comes. I want to thank you for listening today. Of course, pass the word about this program and about PRN.FM, and you want to stay tuned because coming up next is Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. See you. Bye-bye.